Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Refresh your career with Griffith College. Choose from a range of over 100 part-time, online and blended courses to flexibly build your future. Dublin, Cork, Limerick. Visit griffith.ie.
We acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and community. We pay our respects to them and their cultures and to elders both past, present and emerging.
We're back.
I'm in the pod loft because restrictions have lifted and I feel okay about leaving my house again.
I'm sitting on the floor at the spare room in my parents' house.
Ellen is in the middle of nowhere. I've seen a cat. Fifi's here. It's been like a month and a half since I've seen a cat in real life and I am fucking happy to be here. What's up?
Jess just had like a weird mental breakdown before we started recording where she just
repeated, something on Instagram that I shouldn't have looked at. But I'm here and it's fine.
So you're currently going through a manic episode? Is that what's happening right now?
Yeah, probably. And I mean, that's great because I have, but also I'm just excited to be here. It's been a month and a half. I can see our poster in front of me in the pod loft. I've seen Fifi, Zane, our producer is getting another cat as well, which brings me so much joy.
All good things.
And I miss Ellen. Like, it's coming up on a year since I've seen Ellen Moe Sorensen and I'm devo. Yes.
Although we do see each other through the wonders of the internet every fortnight. Yeah. We have not physically occupied. We've not breathed the same oxygen in about 12 months.
It's
wild.
So wild. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Murder on the Land of Oz, the dawning of our new age. I cannot believe you all thought we were stopping the podcast. As if. As fucking if.
We have no other hobbies. What else would we do with our free time?
Literally, Ellen and I were talking about this today. So obviously, my industry, I won't go into it, it's dying at the moment because of hashtag COVID. So there's all these people that are doing these new things and they're like, ooh, new things and branching out and hobbies. This is exactly why I wanted to do this podcast, was because my life as an independent artist was already sucking. So we made this.
You got to make your own content. If nobody is going to pay you to make content for them, you've just got to make your own content.
We've just got to force it on you.
And that's really what we've done quite successfully in the past year. Really forced ourselves on the general listening public. And I'm glad that people still want us to do it.
I'm really happy you're here. Speaking of, so we've had a surge of Patreon subscribers. Is it because we didn't record for a month and a half? Is it because you actually just missed the sound of our voices? I don't know. So we've got a few people that we need to thank. Okay, starting off with Katie Porter, Kelly McMaster, Jordan Boyd, Betsy Violet, who is very active on our Instagram profile, who was a Patreon in the first place, but she upped her subscription to us. Thank you so much, my darling. We also need to thank Tess and Daniel and Meg and then Jillian, who also upped her donation. So guys, thank you so much for joining us on Patreon. Like, I can't even begin to describe how much we are so grateful that you are supporting us. It's a weird time. As we said, if you would like to donate, our Patreon is in our show notes, as always, but we totally understand that it's a weird time for everybody work-wise, so do not feel the pressure, okay?
Do not feel the pressure.
Do not feel the pressure.
Will be there when the economy recovers.
Exactly.
Everything's fine. Don't stress.
Speaking of,
thank you
guys so much. And also just thank you for listening on Spotify. Thank you if you've left us some nice reviews on the Apple iTunes. okay, so what
on do the we, Apple?
On the Apple.
On the Apple.
We've got
on the Facebook.
I've got a shout out that I would like to give. Our friends of our podcast, Lauren McKenna, has just started a great new podcast that I would highly recommend that you listen to. And they've also done some promo for us on theirs as well. It's called Cockblocked by Corona. Jesus Christ, Fifi, we've been back for 2 seconds. Can you hear that, Ellen?
I can hear almost nothing but that noise. Fifi's going hog wild.
Can you say something on the camera? Here. Can you say something on the microphone?
No.
so Cockblocked by Corona, which is Hannah Fredrickson, Kate Foster, and Lauren McKenna. And basically they're helping their beautiful friend Kate, who is recently single, navigate her dating life now that we're all in isolation, which is something we could all, you know, learn from as single people in the age of Corona. I've had so many people try and ask me out for dates on Bumble, and I'm like, are you joking?
Yeah, can't relate. Currently living in a town of 2,000 people. There's no Corona dating for me or for anybody.
Don't date people
in Corona. Don't let people that you don't know into your house during this trying time or ever.
Yeah. Okay, so we should explain what's going on with the new age of Mitlu. You guys are probably like, can you get to the fucking murders? Jesus. Okay. So as we said when you all thought that we were finishing the podcast, how we have been going with Mitlu is now done. Oh, what? Why are you putting your hands over the microphone?
I'm covering the microphone because the dogs are outside and they're making a lot of noise, and I'm trying to do whatever I can to make it not capture.
So how our initial structure of Mitlu is now done, we went around the States and we picked some crimes. So we are going to be moving on from that. But before we do, to sort of buy ourselves some time so we can figure out what the fuck we're doing, we're going to go back, not back around, but we're going to pick some cases that we either didn't cover that people really wanted us to once we had left the States. And then we'll move on to our new format, which we will explain as we come to know how we're going to do it.
Yeah. So basically there was so many cases for every single state that somebody was like, you guys missed this one. You didn't cover this one. Like, I'd love for you guys to talk about this one. They're not necessarily going to fit into anything that we're going to have coming up in the future. So we kind of wanted to like do a little scoop back around, pick up all the ones we've missed, mostly so people stop requesting them in the Facebook messages. And also to talk about ones that we wanted to cover, but maybe like we just couldn't fit it in at the time.
Yeah. Cause they're, you know, we're humans. We don't know everything. You guys know way more than we do.
Oh my God. It's embarrassing.
It's
so many people message and like, actually, did you know that this happened during this case? And I'm like, I'm trying.
So yeah, we're going to try and cover some of the cases that we missed. And then we're going to be moving on to our new format. So I'm going to do the first case. So as the format of these ones where we're going to be like, they're called, I'm going to call them like catch up episodes. Do you reckon?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So the first about catch up.
We'll come up with something catchy.
We're
going to call them blank episodes.
Can I just say though, like I know we weren't super stoked with Jess not having a case when we had the mini episodes, but that Olivia Benson episode, I have gotten so many messages about people saying how funny that was.
That was a real look inside how our brains work. Oh, that was a real, like, just cut open the skull, fiddle around inside the little brain hole.
That was
see
so
what
funny.
Makes us tick.
Okay, so I'm going to be doing the first little catch-up episode. And obviously, with everything that was going on with the recent court case that has sort of been put on hold because of Corona, but I think because of what they've decided to do with the court case, it's still going ahead. Like, there's still news trickling in about it all the time. I had no idea about this case. And then all of a sudden we were in Western Australia and everybody's like, what the fuck? Why aren't you doing Claremont? I'm like, what's Claremont? So we're going to talk about Claremont. Okay.
What are you going to do, Claremont?
So obviously with WA, it's a big state. A lot of the cases that we talked about, especially Ellen's coverage of Eric Edgar Cook, which was so unbelievably good, like I can't even deal. And then obviously talking my, you know, okay attempt at talking about the David and Catherine Burney whole bullshit, had no concept of this Claremont thing. And also it was the 90s. And like we've covered a few cases in the 90s era. One of my South Australian cases, Anita Cobby was sort of the end of the 80s, early 90s. So I had literally no idea about Claremont. Obviously, this is also it's a weird time for me and Ellen in our age group because when this all started in 1996, we were three. So, you know.
I didn't know that many murders when I was three, I won't lie.
No. Okay. So let's wind back to 1996. At this point, Ellen and I are only about two and a bit years old. Mm-hmm. It's January 27th, 1996, and 18-year-old Sarah Spears has been reported missing. So Australia Day, she was celebrating at Club Bayview, which is it's in this suburb of Perth called Claremont. I have organised a couple of flower deliveries in Claremont, I can say that. Basically, what was known about her movements was that she was out celebrating with friends. At about 2:06, she called for a taxi from a phone booth that was a couple of hundred metres away from Bayview. But when the taxi arrived, there was she wasn't anywhere to be seen. So then 5 months later, June 6, 1996, Jane Rimmer vanished after a night out at the Continental Hotel, which is practically around the corner from Bayview. There was CCTV footage that was only recovered a few years ago of Jane outside. She's standing by a pole. She's looking really happy and smiley. So she's disappeared. So a couple of days later, 4 days later on June 10th, the day before my birthday, police believe that there's a link between the disappearances of Sarah and Jane, and they come up with a task force called the Macro Task Force. Now, through the whole journey of the Claremont case, this would be one of the biggest murder inquiries in Australian history. They interviewed over 3,000 people, and it became one of Australia's longest and most expensive manhunts, which I want to go into my thoughts and feelings about all of that at the end of the episode. Anyway.
Oh, I love the thoughts and feelings.
We love a thought and feeling. Mm-hmm. Okay, so 8 weeks later, Jane's body is unfortunately found in the South Perth area of Wellard. Her body hadn't been buried, but attempts had been made to conceal her with vegetation and branches and all that sort of stuff. So March 15th, 1997, so just under a year, Kira Glennon, who was a 27-year-old lawyer, she was back visiting from Perth. She'd been backpacking in South America, and her folks were like sort of relieved about her being back in Australia. They're like, oh, finally, she's safe, you know?
Ooh.
I know. So, so, so bad. And she had disappeared after leaving the same hotel, the Continental, as Jane Rimmer. Like Sarah and Jane, she'd been out celebrating with friends but had decided to make her own way home. She was last seen on the Stirling Highway, which we've talked about a little bit in a lot of our cases in WA. Police believe that she was attempting to catch a cab home. So less than a month later, Kira's remains were found in bushland north of Perth in Eglinton. There were a lot of similarities in the remains that were found of Jane Rimmer and Kira. I should also say Sarah Spears' remains were never found. There was large hole marks in the necks of both Jane and Kira. They both had been covered by foliage. And as I said, Sarah Spears had never been found.
When you say hole marks,
like gaping holes in their necks.
Oh my God. Yeah. Like they were bitten by a vampire or like.
No, they didn't. It wasn't like they haven't. From what I read, they didn't say that there was like bite marks, but like large, like gouges.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
Mm. God, it's weird to be talking about this stuff again. It was weird researching this again. I was just like, oh.
I was like, what am I doing? What's wrong with me?
What's wrong with me? I feel really weird doing this. Okay, so at the scene of Kira Glennon, there was a Telstra-issued knife found at the scene, which is going to make a little bit more sense later on. So obviously with all of the girls leaving the Bayview and the Continental, taxi drivers were basically their main suspects, which you can understand. So there was 5,500 taxi drivers in the Perth area that were considered as suspects, and all of them were urged to supply saliva samples and fingerprints. And there was this interview with this girl. I didn't know who she was. It was just one of those, news cameras, going around and interviewing people on a night out. And Unfortunately, I don't know if this was like a bit of victim blaming on her end. This was 1997, so it's a different time. She basically called women that were catching cabs home by themselves foolish, which is, you know, and I mean, now, like in this day and age now with Uber and, you know, all of the ride sharing stuff, like that's considered as more safer option than getting, you know, just public transport home or getting a cab or all that sort of thing because of, you know. So it's just, you know, these girls were just trying to get home. They weren't doing anything foolish. They were having a nice night out and wanting to get home, and this horrible thing happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So basically then a suspect became prominent, and his name was Lance Williams, and he was a 41-year-old public servant, and he basically became Macro's prime suspect. He lived with his parents in Cottesloe, quite close to the hotel where Jane and Sarah Spears had disappeared, and had basically, he had been out on the evening of when both Jane and Sarah had disappeared. Mm-hmm. And Lance Williams was known to like drive around the Claremont area and other environments. Apparently he was like conducting his own investigation into the murders.
Oh, yeah. Red flag.
So basically him being in like close proximity to where the girls had disappeared, and you know, this habit of his going around and driving around obviously put him to the top of the list of like this of the suspect list. So basically he, the police, what they did was they had plainclothes policemen pretending to be like women policemen pretending to be,
like partygoers
out on a night out, and, you know, attempting to get home. And basically he approached one of the officers offering them a lift.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing happened, and obviously, like, police were ready, like, at the ready that if anything happened.
If anything did happen, they would be there, like, a shot.
So, nothing happened. So, the early hours of February 15th, 1998, so the following year from when Kira Glennon was disappeared and then was found dead a couple of months later, Lance Williams was arrested as he drove through the Claremont area. He was questioned for 12 hours and then he was released. He remained a suspect for the Claremont murders for basically the next 10 years. His family's house was raided quite a few times. Listening devices were installed. He was under like intensive physical surveillance, basically, for such a long time. His office was also bugged, and that sort of became unstuck because one of the listening devices that was concealed in the ceiling actually collapsed the roof and it ended up on his desk.
Oh, that's awkward.
Basically, he was known as a bit of an eccentric, but it did turn out that he was innocent. He was interviewed by a lady called Alison Fan when he was still under scrutiny, and he said, "It was just something that upset me and I just probably was snooping around and, you know, I just got the attention of the police." As of 2008, he was no longer a suspect and he died of cancer in February 2018. So he and his family, like, basically what had happened is that he was brought in for questioning, questioned for 12 hours, was considered a suspect for 10 years, was never arrested.
Mm-hmm.
But his family was still under scrutiny for all that time. So, and there was a lot of scrutiny on the Macro task force for literally zeroing in on Lance Williams. He obviously was a bit of an eccentric. And I mean, a lot of the time, like you see on cop shows all the time, like those people that are, you know, trying to do citizen arrests and trying to like do their own research.
Insert themselves into the investigation.
Yeah. And they're a little bit, you know, eccentric and a little bit, you know.
It kind of makes sense.
So, 2 decades later, since the disappearance of Sarah Spears, in 2016, Bradley Robert Edwards, they, of course, had to put in the middle name.
The middle name.
Why?
It's just the serial killer.
John Wayne Gacy. What's another one? Eric Edgar Cooke.
Uh-huh.
Which was that, Zane? J.J. Holmes, yeah.
Okay. Everybody.
Everybody.
If you've got three names, you are a murderer or you're the host of Murder in the Land of Oz.
H.H. Holmes, not J.J. Holmes, yeah. J.J. Abrams.
J.J. You heard it here first, folks. JJ Abrams is a serial killer.
Either you host a murder podcast or you are a murderer. There is no in between. I'm so sorry. Hello, Mew Mew. Hello, little kitten Bale. Are you going to get in the box? Oh, my God. Fifi's getting in the box.
Just to talk about horrible crimes.
Anyway. Okay. So Bradley Robert Edwards, he was a 48-year-old former Telstra technician from the southwest Perth of Kewdale, and he was arrested. And he was charged with the murders of Jane Rimmer and Kira Glennon. A charge for Sarah Spears' murder came later, obviously, because there was no remains found of Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
Edwards lived alone in a like rundown bungalow, which kind of is like a cottage. Seems like a fancy word for a cottage. I don't know.
Yeah, anyway. Bungalow is like a one, like it's specifically like one story, like little house.
Yeah, exactly. So basically what had happened is that this breakthrough had come through down to matching DNA from alleged crimes in 1988 and 1995, which they matched to the Claremont case. So basically what happened in 1988 was a break and enter of a home in Huntingdale, which is southwest of southeast Perth, in which an 18-year-old occupant was attacked. Her assailant left a kimono at the scene.
His kimono?
Can we just let that sit for a second? Anyway, that was very triggering to me. And there was DNA found on the garment. It was retested nearly two decades later, and it provided an alleged link between the DNA evidence of the Claremont murders, one of the Claremont murders. Police alleged that there was DNA found under Kira Glennon's fingernails, which belonged to Bradley Robert Edwards. Obviously, this is all still in trial, so this is just going by what is reported in the press. The case isn't done yet. I don't think the defense have made their case yet, so... Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm just going by what the internet has told me. Bye, baby. Okay. So basically, as it says literally in my notes underneath, the defense is likely to argue that the evidence was contaminated. I mean, it's been 20 years, so it's not impossible that it's been contaminated within 20 years, but we'll see. Okay, and then the case that he was linked to in 1995 was the abduction and a rape of a 17-year-old girl who had left Club Bayview in Claremont. She was taken to Karrakatta Cemetery in Perth, and she was raped and attacked. So Bradley Robert Edwards was charged with the crimes, and he did plead guilty from what I saw, because the information that I got about the 1988 case came later, but he did admit to the rape and the attack of the girl in Karrakatta Cemetery eventually, but he did plead not guilty at the start. Mm-hmm. But he basically at this stage is still saying that he's not guilty of the murders of Jane, Sarah and Kira.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, October 2019, which was just a month before the trials were about to start, he changed his plea for the 1988 case and the 1995 charges to guilty. And the trial began on November 25th. And basically, okay, so a little bit info on Bradley Robert Edwards. It was Carmel Barbagello. I'm so sorry. She is the prosecutor in the WA Supreme Court. On the second day of his trial, basically there was a lot of witnesses, obviously. That I think they had about 600 witnesses that they were taking to the stand.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah. And the first person that took the stand was Bradley Robert Edwards' first wife, who can't be named for legal reasons. And she basically painted the portrait of what their relationship was like. Basically they went through the details of their marriage and how the relationship ended in the late 1980s. She said that she had met Edwards through a man she was dating at the time and who also worked at the telecom with Bradley Robert Edwards. Mm-hmm. They got together during an event known as the Sandhurst Run in WA's North, a rock concert held over a weekend, and they ended up leaving her boyfriend to be with Bradley Robert Edwards. They shared a three-bedroom house in the suburban Naranda. God, these Perth names are bizarre.
Are they?
I don't know. I feel like... Anyway.
They feel very Perth to me. Like, very they give Perth. Me Perth vibes.
Have you been to Perth?
No.
I have.
I've never left the East Coast.
Ooh. Basically, they, you know, supposedly led this very ordinary suburban life. They owned a horse together before the marriage ended. They had two dogs. And they had, like, this property in the Perth's foothills that they would go to every Saturday and Sunday. Bradley would drive her to work. Like, it all just seems very...
normal?
Very normal. He wasn't a big drinker, but he did, like, a Corona, not the virus. But it was, he was just, like, they just painted this, like, very mundane portrait normal of their picture. Lives, you know. So they were still together in their late teens when they got together, but by 1990 she was, like, keen on them getting married. Apparently he wasn't. And she said, I was asking questions of whether we were going to think about getting married or if marriage was even on the cards for us, and he seemed a little bit upset. The following day, Bradley Robert Edwards attacked a woman at the Hollywood Hospital without warning, grabbing her from behind as she sat in a desk, stuffing a cloth into her mouth and dragging her backwards across the room.
Stuffing a clock into her mouth?
Cloth.
Cloth. Oh, that's not good.
That's not what. That's not better.
It's not better.
It's a bit less bizarre, but basically his ex-wife wasn't questioned further about the – she called it the Hollywood Hospital incident. Other than he didn't pick her up as usual on that day, and she had to take the bus home. So their marriage began to collapse in 1994, between 1994 and 1995, after he began spending excessive amounts of time on the computer at night.
Red flag.
Red flag. He just wasn't interested and wasn't present, and it just slowly began to deteriorate. And then in 1995, he obviously committed the brutal attack on that girl in Karrakatta Cemetery. Like, the photos of it are graphic, like, from the crime scene. Like, it's really, 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 really cooked. And, yeah, basically the marriage broke down. And then, so, yeah, that was, you know, it sounds like up until he went a bit mad, like, it just seemed like sort of mundane sort of life. Obviously he was hiding a lot of things from his ex-wife. And, yeah, as it seems to happen. So basically the police are people, but they're more importantly police. They searched Bradley Robert Edwards' former Huntingdale home in 2017, which was about 10 years after he sold it. Sometime before Christmas in 95, Bradley Robert Edwards caught his wife with another man in bed.
Ooh.
But apparently he was quite mild in his reactions and appeared really calm. And apparently they sort of lived as a bit of a trio under the same roof. Very modern for 1995.
Yeah.
I know. And then it looks like that his ex-wife actually became pregnant from the third person, and he seemed quite fine with it. They sort of had like an on again, off again sort of thing for a while that, you know, seems to happen with relationships, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
But anyway. So then they ended up breaking down, but obviously with them being married during the time of the attacks in 88 mm-hmm. and 95, that's why she was brought in to witness, I guess. So basically what was decided with the trial, probably good in hindsight, is they decided to do a trial without jury, so that it was going to be a judge-only trial, and Bradley Robert Edwards and his attorneys didn't oppose that request. Basically this sort of factors into how long they think a trial is going to last. Obviously with the amount of witnesses that they had, with like the amounts of evidence that they had, trying to have a jury for that long wouldn't really work.
No.
I can understand.
No.
This started in November, it's May now, and obviously everything's been impacted because of coronavirus, but they probably still would have been going on.
They would have still been going on. If they had 600 witnesses, they'll still be going on.
Basically April last year, Justice Michael Corraby basically said deciding the factors for a judge-only trial in the Claremont case was a lingering prejudice against Edwards as well, because it was highly profiled that he had been arrested.
It probably
would have been tricky to find non-biased jurors anyway, so I feel like good choice by them. 600 potential witnesses, probably that number will decrease as like negotiations go between the prosecutor and the defense attorneys. Mm-hmm. By June of this year in 2020, there basically is about that. Oh no, June of last year. Sorry, there's about 1 million pages of evidence, and the evidence obviously disclosed to the defense team. It's about 110 gigabytes.
What?
Yep. The trial began on the 25th of November, and it was obviously with the two victims that were found, so Jane and Kira, there were defensive wounds present on the body, so they did fight back. Basically, what is going to be one of the main pieces of evidence in the trial will be the Telstra work vehicles. Mm-hmm. He was working as a technician at the time, and basically What they're trying to prove is that he used the company's vehicles after hours in order to execute the crimes. Mm-hmm. This was corroborated by people actually seeing Telstra vans parked on multiple occasions at the Karakata Cemetery for no reason, mm-hmm. obviously with the attack in 1995. And obviously that following after the attack, following the disappearance of Sarah Spears as well. Basically, according to the prosecutor, Karma Barbara Gallo, who I mentioned before, the state intends to present this evidence as a part of the case between 95 and 97, where Telstra station wagon stopped and looked at victims on the Stirling Highway near the Bayview and Continental and offering women for rides.
Mm-hmm.
They've gotten the actual model of the Commodore station wagon that they believe. So a little bit more info on the DNA breakthrough. Obviously this was 12 years after, this was 12 years into, sorry, the Claremont investigation because of the, as we've covered and as we've said in a lot of our cases where it has taken a bit of time for evidence to be being able to be analyzed and stuff like that. Technology is changing all the time. And obviously they were able to process a lot more of smaller amounts of DNA under Kira Glennon's fingernails.
Mm-hmm.
This was discovered by scientists in 2008 at a London lab who had the advanced method, as we've talked about before, low copy number analysis. And basically the sample that they had was known as and marked as unknown male 4. And obviously with low copy, there's only so many tests that you can do before you actually...
Degrade the sample.
Degrade the sample. Ellen's a scientist.
And a podcast host.
So obviously having the DNA of the suspect, they went through cold cases and that's how they found the attack. That's how they linked the murder of Kira. The DNA under the fingernails of Kira, therefore her murder, to the attack in 1988 by the woman that was attacked in her home, and then linking it also to the attack at the Karakata Cemetery in 1995. So yeah, this is still an ongoing case, and that was the there obviously was a podcast about the Claremont murders that has actually been taken down because of the trial. So obviously...
Same as Teacher's Pet.
Do you have any info on how... I'll wrap up the case. So that is the information that I've got on the Claremont murders. I say he did it. It sounds... And looking also... even just looking profile-wise at the three victims, Jane, Sarah and Kira, the three murder victims, I really hope that he if he did do it, which he probably did, I hope he discloses where Sarah is, because that's something that we've talked a lot about as well. Even the fact that he has been charged with Sarah Spears's murder,
mm-hmm.
even without her remains.
Yeah, because it would be like one of those cases where the murders of the other two girls are so similar in nature to Sarah's that he's like linked by.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't even remember what they call it, but the pattern is so similar that he's connected to those.
I mean, even looking at the girls, especially all three of them, like they're very beautiful, bright looking girls. They're lovely. And then also like the physical links between Jane and Sarah is spooky.
Really?
Yes. Very, very, very spooky.
They look really similar.
They look very similar. They look very, very similar. As I said, like he has pled guilty to the house attack in 1988. He's pled guilty to the attack and rape in the Karakata Cemetery, but he is still pleading guilty to the three murders. And his defense
pleading
said,
not
you
guilty
know,
to the three murders.
Pleading not, he's pled not, yeah, ple- yeah, yeah, he's pled not guilty, sorry. His murderer, like, no, his murderers, sorry. His defense attorneys have basically said, yeah, he's done some bad stuff, but that doesn't mean
that
he's
doesn't
a murderer.
Make him a
it's like, well, I mean, like, it explains the, you know, as we've talked about in a lot of the cases that we have where it is a serial killing, like, there is a escalation, you know, a lot mm-hmm. of these people start out by, you know, either it's animal abuse or like violence at home. They do generally start out with, you know, aggressive
something.
Attacks and then they progress mm-hmm. to serial killing. Like, that's mm-hmm. that's just fact. So I would say he's done it. I mean, like, if they've got that much evidence against him.
Mm-hmm. If they've got, I would be very interesting to know what is inside that million pages, whether
yeah.
or not it's just like witness testimony or if there is a bit more forensics than.
There might be, yeah.
Yeah, it seems like there would need to be.
What I did want to, like, just, not that I'm not saying that these three women's lives, these five women, sorry, that have been, you know, affected by mm-hmm. this whole thing, not saying that their lives don't matter, absolutely not. But the fact that, what I found sort of astonishing is that, you know, the disappearance and murder of three women,
mm-hmm.
and this is the one of the largest manhunts in Australian history.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like this wouldn't have happened if they were women of colour.
Mm. Yeah.
And because Claremont is actually quite an affluent neighbourhood
mm-hmm.
in Perth.
Mm-hmm.
And the public response to it is just, I mean, obviously any attack or any murder is terrifying. But the public's reaction to this is just...
It's the stereotypical, like,
unbelievable.
Forgive me for saying this as well, but it's the stereotypical crime, like a young woman kidnapped and murdered by some mysterious man late at night. Like, that's what all girls, like, are told to fear. Like, you know, going home after a night out, you might get snatched by some person. Like, when that happens, I think it triggers such an emotional response within the community because it's almost like, it's like a cautionary tale come true. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's exemplifying what people are, like, really told to be afraid of.
Yeah, I just found that astonishing. Anyway, so I guess we'll have more information as that becomes available to the Claremont. Hopefully it should be resolved within the next year or two.
Can you imagine being the families of those victims, having to wait 20 years for some homeboy to even be arrested, and then he finally goes to trial and then coronavirus happens?
Like, there's no justice. And
have
I mean,
they not
the,
been through enough?
The footage of, like, all of them arriving before the trial in November, it's just heartbreaking. And
yeah.
I mean, having to sit through all of that, especially with the amount of evidence that the prosecution do have, like,
it's
that would just
be horrific for them.
Absolutely horrific.
Absolutely horrific.
Yeah. So if anybody has any information about legal proceedings during the age of corona, please get in touch because I would be really interested to sort of know how this has affected the legal system, especially the criminal legal system. So if you have any information on that you would be able to like tell us about, please reach out through the Instagram or our email, murderintheLandOfOz@gmail.com. I would be really, really interested.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's Claremont.
You loved know? It. Good
Gave
stuff.
It a go. Gave it a go. What do we need to tell you? How do we wrap these up again? As I said, if you want to become a Patreon, all the information is down in the show notes as normal. There's no pressure. We're in a pandemic. You do you, Huns. It's a time. It's all good. Like, it's all good.
We're there with you.
We're there with you, Presh. Like, it is a goddamn time at the moment. If you want to reach out over Instagram, we are Murder in the Land of Oz. We're on Facebook as well. Thank you all so much to the people that have reached out to us over the last couple of weeks saying how much you've missed us and how, you know, sending us support. We're sorry that we took a longer than normal break. I think I can speak for both Ellen, Zane, myself. Like, this time has just been quite
cooked
and a bit traumatizing. I can say that on my end.
Yeah.
It has affected me a lot more mentally, I should say. I'm very lucky that I'm still working and everything, but it has affected me a lot more mentally than I actually thought it would. So
yeah.
Thank you so much for being patient with us. We are back, and we're here to bring you that content that you love so much.
The content you crave.
But yeah, thank you all so much. Thank you for listening. Obviously, links to all the merch, links to Patreon, links to the socials, you know it, whatever. We have another episode coming out today as well.
Today also.
So to make up. So we'll talk to you then. Okay. Goodbye.
What happens when you put three of Brisbane's most talented musicians together to create a playlist? You get the new podcast, Shuffology.
Join your three favorite shuffologists on a journey through time, space, shuffology, and playlist creation.
Every Sunday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere where a podcast is available.
Playlists are available on Spotify after the show.
That's Not Gunner Productions podcast.
Forward. It's the one move we're all ready to take. And at the Audi Moving Forward sales event, we're ready to help you on that journey. All Audi dealerships are now open. With tailored solutions to suit your individual needs, like the Audi A6 Saloon, with PCP finance from only €499 per month. Now is the time to make an appointment. Now is the time to start moving forward. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply.
At Irish Life Health, we reward you for embracing a healthier lifestyle. With our benefit plan, you can get up to €250 back on things like fitness wearables, gym membership, or sports club membership, like your local GAA club. Search Irish Life Health. We know Irish life. We are Irish Life Health. Irish Life Health Act is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. Terms and conditions apply. Call us to see exactly what's covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.